Good morning. My name is Kerry Gilligan and I am one of the development officers with the Third Sector Health and Social Care Support Team at the Health and Social Care Alliance. I don't have a badge because I couldn't get through doors if I wore one. I am an occupational therapist. I trained very many years ago at Glasgow School of Occupational Therapy, and it is my pleasure to be here today to talk to and with you around the role of the work that we do in the Health and Social Care Alliance.
And my name is Marianne Brennan, and I am the Development Officer for the Self-Management Team within the Alliance. So now we can tell you who we are. Okay, so like every charity, we've got a mission statement, and our vision is for a Scotland where people who are disabled, living with long-term conditions and unpaid carers have a strong voice and enjoy the right to live well. And for me, what that means is that everything we do is using that voice at the centre that drives our work. What we're going to do today is we want to make today kind of interactive, and we want you to talk to us because there's no point us standing talking to you for an hour and a half and it's too hot a room for that. So we're going to show a video start to start, if it loads. And if we could, this will talk about Dom as an occupational therapist, and it's just really putting it, trying to set the scene. And if you can, you want to take notes or just kind of think about things of what would you do for Dawn if you'd seen her 12 years ago, and that will make sense. How could you support her? And then thinking about it, if it was you, your mum, your dad, anyone close to you, what would you want someone to do for them? And just thinking about it in a context of your role and what you're about to go into. So it's only a couple of minutes long.
Always had the dream of starting a channel. Yeah, it's been a dream since I was a child. Obviously, because it'll help that. Went out and dosed, so the pain was just so bad that there was no option around it. I actually never thought I could swim again, to be honest. I never thought I could get in and out of a pool, it was too difficult and I didn't want to use a hoist. I just thought that was me written off. That's 7 to 8 years of work. Nothing was going to change because there was no treatment available. So it was a case of, this is it. A new doctor came on and decided that we needed to go back to scratch to see if there was anything we could do differently. And occupational therapy, fortunately, we're just starting to do lifestyle management in my area. Week by week, things just keep getting better, and I'm actually managing to do things I never thought I would be able to do again. I'm actually working, helping deliver these lifestyle management courses and solutions courses as a patient swimming group. So since I've started encouraging other people to swim, I'm starting to think that actually you need to get your dream aligned. And here's a boy, so I managed to get back in the pool. I just started 4 weeks ago doing outdoor swimming, and it's going really well. Yeah, thank you. So I'm just under a kilometer. I'm not as confident I can do it anymore, but I'm still confident I'll be able to do either swim Loch Ness or swim the boat. What have you done and what I'm thinking? Nothing's impossible. I can do that. Every day I wish to tell the thing. The dream is now real again.
Okay, so I'll put it back a wee sec. There we go. Okay, so it was just to kind of set the scene. Dawn's 45 and she's an occupational therapy assistant, and she lives with arthritis and chronic back pain. So 10 years ago Dawn had to give up her role because nobody knew what was wrong. She went to doctors after doctors and just nobody could figure out what was wrong. And various examinations, investigations by health professionals, just no explanation could be found. And Dawn tried different medications, medical interventions, and nothing had a positive impact on the pain that she was going through. Dawn received adaptations in her house, which increased her mobility, and it was only through going to a different doctor 8 years ago and working with occupational therapy that her life's turned around. And now she teaches her learning to other people in these lifetime management courses that she talks about. So it's just kind of, before we kind of talk about policy and context, it's just to put it, make you think that, you know, you're about to meet people like Dawn who have been suffering for years and years with pain. And it's, you know, figuring out that her dream was living, was wanting to swim the channel. She might not necessarily be able to do that, but, you know, it's more than just fixing her back pain. You know, these are real people that you're working with. They're people with ambitions just like you and I. So it's just sometimes when we're thinking about things, of putting a whole person perspective on things, which I'm, surely I hope is not new to you, the way that you're thinking, but it's just kind of to reiterate that that's the way that we work, is using the whole person. So we're going to have a discussion in a wee bit after that, so just kind of bear that in mind as we go through. So the Alliance, we are a national third sector intermediary, and I think that's the first I've been able to say that right, for a range of health and social care organisations. We're a membership organisation, so we have over 1,900 members, and that is made up of individuals like yourselves, individuals living with long-term conditions, NHS boards, health and social care partnerships, and a lot of third sector organisations. And everything we do is to put our members at the centre. We can't answer everyone's questions, so we think, like with Alzheimer's Scotland, they're one of our members, so we use their voice to drive a lot of the work that we do. So we're in our 11th year now, so we're not actually as if we've been around for 20 years, but it's just... We're set right underneath the Scottish Government. We're funded by the Scottish Government, and we have good connections in. So it's starting right from the bottom and using that work. All our members drive our work. We have an involvement network as well, which is specifically for individuals living with long-term conditions. And throughout the year, we do a lot of focus groups, lots of different events. And it's just constantly speaking to people and figuring out what's relevant, because we can't make assumptions. Everyone's got a story, and it's just trying to give someone a voice to bring that up. And within the Alliance, to make all this work, we have a number of different programmes. I don't want to bore you with everything, you know, we have about 14 different programmes, but just a couple to touch on is ALICE. Has anyone ever heard of ALICE? This is going to be so educational today. So it's a local information system for Scotland. ALICE is an online resource for different assets in your community, walking groups, different charities. So it's one of those things that you can type in walking group Glasgow and it'll come up with all the near ones. It's a real asset for you that are going to be working in your practices. If somebody's saying to you, I would really like a walking group, but you've got no idea, that's the kind of tools that we'd hope they'd be using. Our Links programme is a community links worker programme that we have a links worker in 7 of the GP practices in Glasgow with the most deprived areas, and it's kind of the non-medical side. It's talking about housing benefits, depression, bereavement. It's just taking the pressure off the doctor to have someone else to talk to. The Academy is a lot about transformational change, House of Care. You know, I don't want to go into every single one of them. Self-management is where I work, and we've got a network of over 500 people, which is separate to the Alliance membership, and it's just everyone with an interest in self-management, and that's specifically the voice we look at when we're driving our work forward. We've got Dementia Carer Voices. Has anyone ever heard of Tommy Whitelaw? Has anyone had that chat, that talk yet? I would suggest having a wee look for Tommy. He talks about caring for his mum, and he's campaigned for over 7 years. His mum had dementia, and he is fantastic. If you ever get the chance to listen to one of his talks, bring tissues and go and listen to it. People Powered Health and Wellbeing, Kerry's team, the third sector health and social care support team. And again, our involvement network, which I discussed as well. So what we do with all this, it's a platform with news. We've got some leaflets with us about what our membership means to people, and it's free to sign up for you all. I suggest you sign up, and it's just a way of, we get our weekly bulletins every Wednesday, and it's news that's happening all over Scotland, different policy news, different news about integration, different events we have on, just an opportunity for you really to see it in a big picture. And obviously you as well can feed into that if you've got news, if you've got blogs and things like that. Promoting our organisation vision and goals. And again, it just keeps coming down to, we're putting the people at the voice, putting the voice of the people at the centre. I'm trying to see what the next slide is. So as we work underneath the Scottish Government, and Kerry will go on to talk about the policy work we do, we have good inroads with MSPs and ministers and things like that. We get them along to our events, and we just try and really champion everything our members say is for our members. It's a great way to feed up. We just had an NHS governance event was held by the Health and Social Care Support Committee, and we invited our members that have real life experience to sit around that table with ministers and MSPs and just share their experiences, good or bad, of what they had in the NHS. And it was Neil Finlay, I'm not good with all the MSPs, actually I've watched the YouTube video after it, and he's recognised the stories make a difference. It's different, all the politicians sitting in a room, or us, me and my colleagues sitting in a room. You need to put that voice. I've got lived experience, a lot of us will have lived experience, and we wear two hats in a lot of the jobs that we do. But to have that opportunity working at the Alliance or getting involved in the Alliance is a really exciting thing for me. But Kerry is going to discuss some of the policy work that we do as well now.
Yep.
Okay, thanks, Marianne.
So I'm guessing that a lot of you are sitting there thinking, do you know what, this sounds like occupational therapy to me. Yeah? Some nods? Yeah? Everything we do at the Alliance is core to the values and principles of occupational therapy. It's all about individuals, it's all about listening to people, it's all about working in partnership. But we are fortunate in that we have the ears of the Scottish Government, and that is a really, really fortunate position to be in, and I would urge you to join as a member, as an associate member. It doesn't cost you anything, but it's a brilliant opportunity for you to keep in touch with what's happening at Scottish Government level, but not only that, to influence policy. When you're out in practice, you've probably seen it already. I mean, I remember over the 30 years that I practiced as an occupational therapist, all sorts of different policies appeared. In the olden days, there were bits of paper, and they often sat on shelves, and they gathered dust, and they meant nothing if people didn't actually bring them to life. So I think because of places like the Alliance, because of social media, because of access to the internet, you have to remember that when I trained, we had none of those things. We typed up our reports in typewriters with two fingers. This is true. We've got a brilliant opportunity to actually shape the kind of Scotland that we want to live in and that we want to see for the people that we are working with. So I'm going to just talk a wee bit about some of the policy work that the Alliance is involved with. The Alliance is made up of lots of different teams, and I hadn't really, really clocked that before I joined them. But there's a policy team that know everything that there is to know about policy. So if there's any questions or queries that you have, what we'll do is we'll give you our cards at the end of this, our contact details, and we can happily put you in touch with some of the people that know much more what they're talking about, certainly, than I do. So we have a policy team in the Alliance, and their role, as Marianne's touched on, is to really act as the voice for our members. And one of the things that we will do is to respond to consultations on behalf of members, and we'll gather members' views in lots and lots of different ways. That might be through focus groups. So, for example, I was recently involved in the work around the social security review that's going on. That may or may not be familiar to some of you. And my role was to go out and meet with a group of people who have learning difficulties in their own environment to listen to their thoughts and views around what the assessment process should look like, what their current experiences are, and what they want it to look like in the future. We're lucky in that we managed to reach some of the people that don't often get the opportunity to be heard. And by that, what I mean is, if you don't have access to the internet, if you don't read the papers, if you're not around and about, if you're not, perhaps particularly literate, if you struggle with interpretation of information, how are you really going to get your voice heard? And that's our role at the Alliance. That's one of the things that we're here to do, which is why I'm so passionate about the work that I now do. So As Marianne said, our membership goes from very large organisations like Alzheimer's Scotland to very small organisations that might just be two people running a voluntary group. Everybody's equal. It doesn't matter what size you are. It doesn't matter what shape you are. Everybody's got an equal voice. And as a professional associate, you too can influence that. And you might also want to think about that for the future in terms of any of the organisations that you come in contact with. So our policy team, what they do is they'll read these lovely policies that are, if you ask me, very, very difficult to understand sometimes. They're full of legal and technical terms. They break them down and then they will communicate with our members and say, this is the bit that you need to think about and this is how it might affect you. As an OT, I'm thinking that sounds a lot like activity analysis to me. Do you still do activity analysis? You do. I used to hate activity analysis. It was just so tedious, but actually it becomes just a core part of what you do, and that's actually what the policy team do as well. So, moving on then, I'm going to try and touch on some of the key policy documents that you may or may not be aware of. And the reason that these are important is, for me, it doesn't actually matter what the picture in the front say, you know, what it looks like. It doesn't actually matter actually what the words are. It's about what difference it can make to me as a citizen of Scotland, to me as a practicing occupational therapist, to me now as a member of the Health and Social Care Alliance. And what, for me, these policy documents do is they create doorways. So the stuff that as OT staff we've been campaigning for years is to have the voice of the people we work with heard. The policy landscape has now shifted to create doorways in which we don't need to push anymore. I remember years and years ago, it was all hospital centric and you were thought you were crazy if you wanted to do something in a community setting. I remember working in an acute admission ward, mental health acute admission ward, and wanting to set up a group in a community setting for people who were about to be discharged from hospital. And the resistance that I found, along with my colleague, to actually being able to do that was absolutely unbelievable. And that probably seems, you know, you probably think, seriously? I went to my boss and I said, can we please have some money? We need to be able to give them a cup of tea and coffee and some biscuits, but we might also need to rent a room. She gave us £10, and all we could afford for that, somebody offered us the ladies' toilet in a local hotel. So we had to be really innovative about where we did it, and luckily we found somebody in a community setting that was prepared to give us a venue free and give us tea and coffee. So that, you know, the policy context at that time did not enable any of the stuff that we're about to talk about today. At that point in time, I think it was the Griffiths report had just been launched, and that was about closing down the big, huge mental health hospitals and getting people into community. So really, you know, I think that right now we're on the precipice and the edge of something that is absolutely seismic. There has never been a shift in public services like there are now. And you guys are so lucky because you can really influence what that looks like. The groundwork, as we'll go on to talk about, has been set, and as you get out there and you practice as occupational therapists, you're going to have the opportunity to really make it happen. So, future of public service delivery in Scotland, we all know this, demand for services has never been at its, you know, ever been higher, there's not enough money in the pot, and so basically, in a principle, we need to think about how we do things differently. Now, for people that have worked in service for a long, long time, that's a real, real challenge. Because if, like me, you were in the, you know, if you remember the 1980s when you said, actually, we need 20 more staff and you got the money for 20 more staff, then people like me are having to think completely differently because you can't get any more money anymore. So there's something about the real creativity that you need to have nowadays, which is about not thinking that as a professional you are the only person that can do something. You need to think about working differently. And some of you probably witnessed that in your practice placements. And I'm guessing at Alzheimer's Scotland, you probably saw some of that. So in 2011, the Scottish Government, it pulled together a commission to look at the need for public sector reform, and that was known as the Christie Commission. And I'm guessing that some of you may or may not have heard of that. If anyone wants more detail about any of these policies, then you can let us know afterwards. Basically, the principles of that were, though, that the reforms needed to empower people, they needed to promote partnership working, they needed to promote a prevention rather than a curative approach, and they needed to make sure that duplication was reduced. This is probably like bread and butter for you now. At the time, it was pretty groundbreaking, and it's pretty worrying, actually, when you think that was only 6 years ago. So, the other key document that, again, you've probably heard about, which was also published in 2011, that was a busy year for Scottish Government, was the 2020 Vision for Health and Social Care. And I suppose my take on that one is that that was about a real fundamental shift around shifting the balance from acute inpatient care to community-based care, the balance of care, we call it. It's been called, there's all sorts of buzzwords, and it's changed over the years. But basically, in my simplistic view, it's about making sure that people don't need to get into hospital to get the kind of care that they need. That was where the notion of integrated care was highlighted again. And actually, I'm going to go on and just talk about this. And this is my bread and butter now. And it was my bread and butter in my previous role, which I'll just touch on very, very briefly. Does anybody remember Joint Future? No. Joint Future was a previous Scottish Government policy which was brought in the 1990s, and it invited health and social care organisations to work in partnership. And I'm using the word invited. And what happened was that it didn't happen on the whole. So fast forward to, remember when that was, 2014, and the snappily named, let me just get this right, Public Bodies Joint Working Scotland Act was introduced, and that didn't invite people to work together. It legislated for people to work together. And what that really means is that there is no choice now. Now, what a kind of sad state of affairs it is that people have to be told what to do, but hey, that's where we are. So, for me, in my previous role, I used to be the head of profession for Ayrshire and Arran for occupational therapy. But latterly, I worked in one of the health and social care partnerships. And my job was to work with all the allied health professions in that partnership to support them through the implementation. Well, firstly, the shadow period, and then the implementation of health and social care integration. And it was a really challenging period, and it's still a challenging period out there. But the one thing that I always have held on to, and I think my colleagues held on to as well, is that it's actually about thinking about the kind of health and wellbeing services that we want for the people of citizens of Scotland. So, again, you'll probably be aware, are people aware of the 31 partnerships across Scotland? Anyone had a placement in any of them? Just a wee quick show of hands. One, just two? Nobody else had a placement in a partnership? Three people had a placement in a health and social care partnership? One, two, three, four. So these are new and emerging bodies. I'm not going to go into the legislative background to them, but what I will say is that of the 31 partnerships, only one went for a lead agency model, and that was Highland. Has anyone been to Highland on placement? Right. Where did you go? What was it, children or adult services? Adult services. So in Highland, what happened in Highland was that all of the adult services that the social care, social work department delivered were transferred over to health, and health now have a lead responsibility for health and social care, adult and older people services. And similarly, all of the children's services that health used to deliver were transferred over to social care, so they now have an integrated health and social care children's service. Highland is the only place in Scotland that did that. All of the other ones have gone down what they call the body corporate model, What that means was a new organisation was formed. So there's still the health board and there's still the local council, but there is something called an integration authority, and that's what these are all known as, the 30 of them, 30 integration authorities. Each of them have something called an integration joint board, and that integration joint board is responsible for the overall governance of what's happening in the partnership. Now, it's not rocket science. It's actually really, really simple. The health and social care partnerships have a responsibility for making sure that everybody, and when I say everyone, I mean everybody, I mean from people that use services, paid carers, unpaid carers, third sector organisations, the independent sector, statutory social care and statutory health care services, have an equal voice in the planning and delivery of health and social care services. Now, that's no mean feat, because that's not the way we've done business up until now. Some areas did it better than others, but on the whole, that's not the way we did business. So these new organisations have had a huge, huge development, I suppose, in terms of what's happened for them over the last couple of years. So the three partnerships in Ayrshire went live in 2015. The rest of them went live in 2016. And really what they've been doing over the last wee while is putting in place the nuts and bolts of this new authority. So as you can imagine, you know, the governance arrangements, putting in place the subgroups, making sure that there's appropriate representation. So it's been very, very nuts and bolts. So you went to, which partnership did you go to?
GGC, for the last Glasgow.
You went to Glasgow?
Yeah.
I don't know if you were aware of any of that kind of mechanics of things going on.
The team that I was just in were generic working, so right. I guess there's an aspect of that.
Okay. So, for me, integration is not about stripping away professional roles at all. Not at all. If anything, your professional role is even more important. But what it is about working together with people. One of the things that the Alliance talks about is about ceding power. And for me, that actually is about, as an occupational therapist, that's at my core, and I think it's at the core of what the partnerships are about as well. It's about recognising that people actually, they know themselves better than anyone else. And in fact, see that social security group I was talking about, the people with learning difficulties, we asked them, who knows you best? And every single one of them said, me, I do. So why don't you ask me about what matters to me? And actually, when you think about it, you know, as new occupational therapists, I'm guessing that you just do that. That's just what you do. It's woven through you like a stick of rock. But I bet you've also seen some practice where it maybe isn't the way that people do things. Maybe some of the people that have been in the roles a wee bit longer. And I'm not being critical here. There was a way of doing things in the 1980s, particularly in the 90s, where it was almost like, you know, there's the Haynes manual of how to treat somebody with, so you do this, 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 this and this, right, you're discharged. And so we really are, you know, that's why I think this is seismic. There's a huge, massive cultural change going on here that you are ambassadors for now. You're the ones that are going to really make it happen. You're the me of the future. You'll be the heads of profession. You'll be AHP senior managers. You'll be senior OTs. You'll be all sorts of people in all sorts of roles. You'll be a development worker who actually doesn't practice as an occupational therapist anymore, but uses their occupational therapy skills every single day. So I can still prove that I can be registered with HCPC because I still use my skills. So you're in this amazing and fortunate position, and you've got this huge, big, golden, shiny, open door that I would really, really urge you to walk through. Okay, on to some more of the policy stuff. Realising realistic medicine. You heard about this? So this was published last year, update at the beginning of this year. Interesting points. One of the most interesting points for me is Roston, isn't it?
Sure.
Is there any chance we could?
It was just because there was people out there. I didn't know if it was
open out, or even are you going to freeze if we open the window? Oh, they're locked. Oh, that means you can't escape. That's what this is for.
Would you still prefer me to open it? But
no, it's fine.
Is it okay? I'll just. If you can't hear me, just tell me you can't hear me. Okay. Yeah. So realistic medicine. It's like, again, wow, you know, occupational therapy staff have been saying this for years, it's not all about doctors and nurses. Hello, there's some people out here that actually know what they're talking about, and we've got every bit as much to offer as the doctors have and the nurses have. But now the chief medical officer has put it in a report, so again, there's another golden shiny open door for us to walk through. And actually, you know, one of the themes around about realistic medicine is about collaboration with people and co-production. Co-production is something that the Alliance is heavily involved in. And again, if you want to know a wee bit more about that programme at the Alliance, you can let us know. So, I think one of the things I want you to think about, not to answer today, is as an occupational therapist, when you're out there, how are you going to... Sorry, I'm laughing. They're playing with their table like that, wheeling it back and forth. What could you do to challenge the traditional medical model that, let's face it, is still there? It's not there everywhere, but it is still there, isn't it? I don't live in Cloud Cuckoo Land, do I? It's still there. So what can you do to challenge that? Just think about that one. It's important. And you've got a nice shiny golden open door to help you. And you can wave a piece of paper about it if that helps as well, in front of your doctor's noses. The National Clinical Strategy. A wee bit more of the same. Are you getting the feeling here that these themes are all very, very similar? You know, so this doorway is like a doorway with another doorway with another doorway. And they're all leading to the same place, which is actually about being able to work with the people that need to access our services in a collaborative way. But more than that, being able to work as a citizen of Scotland, I guess, in a different way to promote health and well-being, to support communities to take responsibility for their health and well-being. One of the things that I didn't touch on with the realistic medicine policy is that real fundamental about individuals taking responsibility for their own health. I don't know about you, but I know that my mum and dad are in their 70s, and what happens is, you know, they smoked too much. You know, they were children of the 50s and the 60s, so you can imagine, you know, they enjoyed all the fine things in life, like cigarettes and alcohol, and I don't want to know whatever else they enjoyed. But they're kind of reaping the kind of outcomes from that now. And it's interesting, their response when they become unwell, it's like they want to just go straight to A&E. Now that's a bit of a challenge for me, and I'm like, no, don't, please don't do that, let's talk about some alternatives here. They phone me and say, I went to A&E, I had a rash. I'm thinking, oh no, parents, honestly, this is really bad. Particularly when I worked for NHS years and I'm thinking, please don't tell them that you're my parents, because they'll be like, Kerry, you really need to do something about these parents that keep just shipping up and saying, help me now. But actually, there is something about that whole shift that it's not too late for my mum and dad, but that generation, that's what they expected. They expected they became ill and somebody fixed them. We're talking something quite different now. We're talking about people, us, taking responsibility for our own health and well-being, but not just us as individuals, in our local communities. And I think that's one of the things that we're starting to see as the health and social care partnerships develop. We're seeing local communities. So one of the legislative requirements as part of the partnerships is that the partnerships have a minimum of two local, I'm trying to think what they're called now, local kind of like community planning groups. So my partnership that I worked in was North Ayrshire, and in North Ayrshire we had six, and one of them was in Irvine, and that is about getting people that live in Irvine along with people that deliver services in Irvine together to look at what are the, this is going to sound really fancy, but basically what are the demographics of the area, and let's translate that into what the local people are saying. What are people saying that they want and they need in terms of staying healthy and being well? And one of the things that Irvine group came up with was, we want access to occupational therapy, because we recognise that type of approach can support us to stay healthy and to be well. Wow, you can't really advocate for that, can you? So there's a real opportunity in terms of local communities, you know, having that opportunity to influence and see what it is that they need. So the National Clinical Strategy, it's more of the same. It's very much about, again, that move from hospital-centric services to community-based services. And a lot of the partnerships you see are starting to develop things called, they might be called GP hubs, they might be called community hubs, they might be called primary care hubs. But basically, it's about not just being about the GPs anymore. Part of this was based on a real issue, which is about GP recruitment. Lots and lots of people, lots of GPs are leaving the service. Those that are in it want to work part-time. They're really, really struggling, basically, to get people to do GP roles. And so, in a lot of ways, that's worked to our favour, because they've had to think about, so who else might be able to do this? And guess what, let me think, AHPs and nurses, well, nurses are obvious, but sometimes allied health professions aren't. So again, there's a brilliant opportunity here to influence that whole agenda and to actually be able to get in at primary care level rather than waiting till somebody is referred to you at a different point in their journey. So I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but basically I think that it's all very much about the values and principles of occupational therapy. Prevention, helping people to keep themselves healthy and wealthy, whether that be through working, whether that be through their leisure activities, whether that be through their self-care, whatever that looks like. But actually these are all important in terms of maintaining the health and well-being of the Scottish population, but this is our time as occupational therapy staff. So, where are we now? I've kind of given you a wee bit of a summary of the world according to Kerry, but actually Audit Scotland produce reports every year about how are we doing. And there's a couple of things, you can read that for yourself, but a couple of things that I think are important for us to recognise is that in the last report, Audit Scotland recognised that shift from hospital services to community is not happening as quickly as was hoped. And that's around that high demand and the reduced financial pot. So that does lead to the need for creativity. And what better group of professionals to have that creativity than occupational therapists? It's in your bones, you know? What is your job? Your job is to help people work around. And I always found that, I did that as a clinician, but as a leader and as a manager, I used exactly the same skills, supported people, whether it was people using services, or whether it was colleagues, whether it was our team, to work around and find different ways of doing things. Your skills are probably, and I'm going to say this, the most valuable out there, right? So you've picked a great profession. Whether you realise it or not, you've picked a great profession. You can transfer those skills into lots and lots of arenas. So one of the other things that the audit committee highlighted was that the integration authorities absolutely are a key driver with change. However, they've been so caught up with the kind of technicalities of becoming these new corporate bodies that in terms of transformational change, there's not an awful lot happening across Scotland. There's some. And if you want to know more about that, get in touch with us and we can put you in touch with people who are actually delivering on transformational stuff. For example, was it 2 weeks ago? About the ALIP stuff? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So have you heard of the ALIP? The Active and Independent Living Improvement Programme, which is the new Allied Health Professions Delivery Plan. Okay, so you've heard about it now. You're going to be hearing about it more. It's going to be launched in April. But basically, what that's done is see all these policy documents. It's pulled it and turned it into a delivery plan for allied health professions. So guess what? One of the key themes is partnership. Surprise, surprise. So Marianne and myself and a number of people from the Alliance held an event a couple of weeks ago with the allied health professions within North Ayrshire Partnership and third sector organisations to support them to start to identify new ways of working. So they already are doing some transformational work down there, but we wanted to give them some more tools and more skills to help them to do that. So one of the things that we told them about was the self-management work. There is a self-management fund that opens every year. that's worthwhile knowing about, because, you know, there isn't much money out there, but sometimes there's wee pockets you can get. So Marianne, you don't want to forget Marianne, because she can help you with that. The ALICE, that online resource, that is absolutely fundamental to your role as OTs. So you can direct people and you can signpost them. And the other thing we did was we introduced them to some of the third sector colleagues. So that's an example of some of the things that we're doing to try and, I suppose, bring these policies to life. Because as I said before, a policy is only a piece of paper that sits on a shelf or a document that sits on the internet unless somebody actually does something with it. And I would really, really urge you to take this and do something with it. So I'm going to pass back over to Marianne in a minute. Let's just take a 10-minute break. Just before I do that, is there anything that's not clear about that?